Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back for what I'm persuaded is perhaps one of the most important conversations we'll have on this program. It is with Dr. Kim Holmes. These days he is a distinguished fellow and former vice president of the Heritage Foundation. He has also served with distinction in his government role as an assistant secretary of state for international organizations, a position in which he interacted with a lot of the folks that we're now talking about in connection with the liberal mind and how it is being closed. And Kim, you were describing before the break the phenomenon of a kind of authoritarianism on campus. And I'd like to ask you to, sort of develop more fully how this is working, how the silencing of dissent, particularly, but not exclusively, in academia, is kind of the leading edge of this, radical multiculturalism and postmodern left.
Well, ideologically, it's happening because the ideology of multiculturalism, as we have described it, is the reigning ideology in the university. And when I say reigning ideology, I mean it's basically official. It's written into not only what is taught, but also even into the regulations and management of the universities. So it's not only the professors, it's actually the administrators who believe in this ideology, and they believe and they enforce it. The second thing is that this is really important to realize. No authoritarian ideology is ever imposed or, more importantly, successfully imposed unless there are a large number of people believe that somehow it's the right thing to do and it's being done for the public good. And in some ways, essentially, the classic liberal view is that nobody knows for certain what the ultimate answer is in government, and so therefore we need to keep things pluralistic and not impose one view on everyone else. That's the liberal view. But the illiberal view of progressive liberals today is they've found the answer to all questions. Science is settled. History is over. We have found the answer to all of our social and political problems. Now it's just a mopping up operation. We're going to enforce it. And it's all done in the name of tolerance. It's all done in the name of being open-minded. It's all done in the name of inclusion. The surface of it looks perfectly beautiful, wonderful, and tolerant. But the fact is that when the rubber meets the road, when the enforcement comes down, they cannot tolerate anybody who disagrees with them. And so they must find ways to exclude them from the public debate, from the classroom, because they're using the moral model of the civil rights movement from the 60s, where anybody disagrees with you is the moral equivalent of being a racist. And so therefore you have the moral approval, if you will, of the public to exclude them because they are so heinous, they are so evil, they have no right to express their point of view. And to keep in mind that the point of view I'm talking about being expressed is the Western American traditional view that we had for 250 years. And so everything about our past has to be excluded. You know, Jackson has to be eliminated from our currency. History has to be rewritten. Everything has to be changed because we cannot tolerate an alternative point of view.
A case in point that has come to light in recent days as a result of the action of a number of attorneys general around the United States. We were talking about this with Myron Ebel at the Competitive Enterprise Institute last week, Kim, is the assault on what are now called climate deniers, including using instruments of the state against them, whether it's a think tank like CEI or a corporation like ExxonMobil. Discuss that as kind of a case study of the phenomenon you're describing.
Yeah, this is very, very concerning. The U.S. Attorney General from the Virgin Islands has issued a subpoena against the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and this is very, very dangerous in my opinion. I think the thing to realize is that the progressives start first with the culture, and then they move towards the law. It happened with their moving into hate crimes and hate speech and the like. They start off with making the philosophical and moral case about what can be said and what cannot be said, or what is right and what's wrong. And then once they convince a number of people to be on their side, then they start moving into the law to try to enforce it. So it matters a great deal in the popular culture what we Americans actually tolerate and allow to happen in our schools and elsewhere, because the next step is if you reach a consensus, they're going to start moving into the law. So therefore, this whole debate about climate change, which many people thought, well, it's just, a disagreement over science and the like, there are these so-called skeptics and the like, and so you had all these disagreements, and the next thing you know, you got attorney generals issuing subpoenas if you happen to disagree with the consensus on climate change. Well, this started in the culture. You had people like Bill Nye, the science guy, who was very popular. He was asked the question, and he didn't rule out actually jailing climate skeptics as war criminals, an idea that was proposed by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And when this happened, it was kind of like ho-hum, or when you have Sean Penn and other Hollywood people making statements about, well, Ted Cruz should be put in an insane asylum and actually be put on television, interviewed as if it's a serious proposition. The popular culture is enabling these views. Everybody's getting used to them. It seems to be not only the right thing to do, but the cool thing to do.
Yeah,
and
the authoritarian
is where
cool,
the problems
you,
really rise.
As you call it.
The next thing is it gives permission for these lawyers and these attorney generals to take it to the next step and start coercing people.
Yeah. Kim, let me turn to something that you just alluded to, and that is this organized effort to use so-called hate crimes and hate speech as a legal instrument for restricting freedom of expression, one of our constitutionally guaranteed freedoms. I mentioned, of course, that you've served in the United Nations sort of rubric in connection with your responsibilities as Assistant Secretary of State for International Organizations. And one of the sort of forces at work in the United Nations, as you know so well, is the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which has had for 10 years, the 10th anniversary was marked in December of last year, 10 years, a plan, they call it a program of action, to essentially criminalize expression that gives offense to Islam. And the partners that have enabled them to make huge strides in implementing that kind of infringement, even on our First Amendment freedoms, of course, have been on the left, notably, again, Hillary Clinton, who talked about using old-fashioned techniques of shaming and peer pressure to try to accomplish this kind of restriction of speech. As an example, and I don't mean to suggest it's the only one, but as an example of the trajectory we're on, talk a bit about how important freedom of expression is and how mortally dangerous to a free society an attack like this can be.
Well, it's no accident that freedom of expression and also religious freedom is in the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights to the Constitution. The founders thought it was the key freedom and liberty upon which all others ultimately depended. And if you don't have that, you really can't count on having any other liberties at all in the long run. Thankfully, when issues of freedom of speech have come before the Supreme Court, at least in the past years, Supreme Court usually is pretty protective of freedom of speech. But that hasn't stopped progressives over the last 50 years trying to find ways to get around it. And it's had many different avenues. Radical feminists have been the ones to push the envelope the most, to people like Catherine McKinnon, a lawyer and radical feminist lawyer, and others have tried to make the argument that freedom of speech was actually just a fiction, and it was used to discriminate against women. And so they created this category called hate speech, where certain things that were said could be considered to be hateful and therefore criminalized. So this has been going on for 35 or 40 years. And then the most recent development, as you mentioned, with the Islamic issue, is to try to make any type of criticism of Islam so-called Islamophobic, and therefore put that in the category of hate speech, and therefore it can either be regulated or curtailed in some ways.
And that's clearly where this goes. Let's make no mistake about it. It may not have gotten there yet, but it's there's a resolution that's been introduced in the House, as you probably know, Kim Holmes, by a number of Democrats that would essentially try to formalize this sort of restriction. We'll talk about that and identity militants and much more with Kim Holmes in our next segment right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.